always live and always up to date. We're the official home of the Wildcats. We are Sports Radio 1290.
Welcome back to the Kevin and Mike Show on Sports Radio 1290. I'm Mike Luke, filling in for Kevin Woodman. Anthony Cimino, filling in for myself. Josh in working the boards. We're very, very fortunate now to be joined by U of A coaching legend Jim Rosborough. Coach, how you doing?
Well, I'm trying to look in the mirror here and see who the legend is.
Oh, well, we're talking to him.
I'm doing very well. How are you guys?
Not too bad.
Good.
Tell us
a little bit about your new gig.
Well, in the fall, and actually we're doing some things now, I'm going to go out with Todd Holthouse out to Pima. I worked with him a little bit last year just to help him install a 1-3-1 zone that we'd used down at Arizona a bit, and then I came back this fall and helped him put it in probably 8 or 10 days in the fall. And then this spring I was out there most every day for practice and helping Todd in any way I could. I really think Todd's a good coach, very, very good coach, and has a really great future either at Pima or if he chooses to move on. So I'd like to help him and pass on any knowledge. And I'm, you know, no longer at the point where there's much of any ego involved or anything else, and it's really just to help out Todd and to help out the kids. I really like his team and who he has coming in. So a little bit right now in his spring workouts, and then in the fall I'll be out there full-time. So really looking forward to helping them out if I can.
Coach, you've done a lot of stuff in the past couple years. It's, basically, in these last few years, you've been just trying to, you know, stay busy, staying involved in the sporting world. What's an average day like for one Jim Rosborough?
Well, for 4.5 years, you know, after I left Arizona, I did a couple years of fundraising for Jim Livengood, and then I was out at Pima for 1 year with Carl Piraway and the Pima guys, and we had absolutely, it was really about as fun a year as I'd had recently, you know, not to, you know, brag about it or anything, but we finished 7th in the country and just had a great year, won 20 games. And then I've spent the last 4.5 years with Vicki Mays and the women's tennis program down at the university. I had played a lot of tennis over the years and had known Vicki since she was here as an undergrad. And then this spring, and maybe what you're getting at, I did about 20 game scouting for the Atlanta Hawks years and years ago, I think in 1990 or 91. Mike Budenholzer, who's the current coach of the Hawks, had come here. And the first coaching guys that he ever did in his life was here at our summer basketball camp. So we've stayed in touch over the years, and he just wondered if I'd be a second or third set of eyes. So I did about 20 games for the Hawks this spring, along with going out to Pima. So, you know, it's a good pace. It's not 8 or 10 hours a day at this point, and who knows in the fall, but it's been a good pace. So probably busy 5-6 hours a day and not sleeping in or anything else. And as you just said, really staying busy. That's been the best part of it.
All right. So, Jim, the worst officiated game, Duke, 2015 Duke Wisconsin, 2001 Duke Arizona.
Well, Josh Pastner, becoming a legend at Memphis, at least he's telling us he is. Josh and I walked off the floor after the Duke game in 2001, and I can't use the exact expletive that I word, but I said, Josh, we just got, let's say, hammered. That wasn't the word I used, and it was the truth. I walked off the court. Now, this is just personally. I didn't cry. I wasn't upset. I just felt we absolutely gotten screwed and homered. I don't know if you guys saw this. There was a cartoon that came out at the time with all five of the Duke starters rushing the middle of the court, and they were all hugging, but right in the middle of this hugging process was the three officials. And actually kind of funny and kind of appropriate. I left the court just feeling that was a god-awful game. And then to kind of justify that, I suppose over the course of the summer in recruiting in 2001, again, personally, I bumped into probably 10 or 12 guys who had been involved in officiating, and they just confirmed it was the worst called game that they'd seen. Although I will say this one this spring was baffling with Wisconsin and Duke. You know, Bo Ryan and the Wisconsin guys, obviously you're upset and everything else. But then you look at the team who's committed over the whole year, and statistics tell a lot. You know, just as your guys' ratings do, statistics tell you a lot. Wisconsin had committed, I think, what, the fewest fouls of any team in the whole country. And yet in the second half of that game, the free throws were 15-3. I mean, it's just, it's puzzling, it's baffling. You just kind of wonder how those things can happen. So, but I thought ours was horrible in 2001.
Coach, did you ever get a clarification in that 2001 game about the Jason Williams no call?
Mean the tackle?
Yes, the tackle, correct.
Somebody said, well, it really didn't interrupt the flow of the game or something like that. I don't know. That's about the only thing I ever heard. But, you know, the point is a foul is a foul. And, I mean, you've seen stuff this year. You guys have watched games this year, and this is one of the things that all the coaches have talked about. I mean, we're looking at games with 40, 50, 60, sometimes 70 free throws in a game. It's a 40-minute game. And, you know, if they're going to call hand check and they call it right away, coaches will adjust to that. But it really has gotten to be a long game. And you guys have seen this as well. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to do something about the end of games. Oftentimes, the last 4 or 5 minutes in a game will take, what, 20, 25 minutes? It's just, something's a little fishy, and it is still a good game. I don't know if I totally agree with Auriemma from UConn that the men's game is screwed up. I don't necessarily think that, but, I mean, you do look around the country and see scoring is down and a lot of games in the 50s and 60s. And I don't know. But back to your original point, no, there really wasn't a total explanation of the Jason Williams thing other than that I couldn't quite read what was on the front of his jersey. Did it say Duke on the front of his jersey?
All right, Coach, I'm going to push against the wall right here. Who wins, 2001, 1997? End of the season for both.
Yeah, it's not that tough. 1997, you know, we were loaded and we got hot at the right time. But 2001, you look up and down that roster, and I guess if I had to put my money on it, I would say 2001. Now, A.J. Bramlett would say he was the best center, but you're looking at Lauren Woods, 7-7-1, and you look through that 2001 roster with Jason and Gilbert and Richard and Michael Wright and coming off the bench, Luke and Ricky and those guys. Yeah, I think Gene Edgerson was still there, Justin Wessel. 2001 was loaded. In 97, you win the title, and that's what you asked for. Miles and all those guys were tough, and Jason Terry's still a pro, but if you back me right up to the wall, I think I'd probably take 2001.
And where does 88 factor in there?
Well, I wasn't here.
Oh, that's
then.
Right. That's right. Sorry about that.
Awful good team. Very well balanced. You know, obviously with Sean Elliott, player of the year, and Kerr shooting, and Craig McMillan, big part of it, Anthony Cook, Tolbert. Really good team. You know, it's kind of hard to figure. And also, I think the game has changed appreciably since 88 a little bit in how it's played. So that was hard for me to judge. I guess, though, of the years I was here, which was 18, I would say probably talent-wise on the floor of that 2001 team overall. Although, you know, every one of the backcourt guys was drafted in 97. I think A.J. was drafted and maybe went right overseas. And Bennett Davison had a long career overseas, and he's probably one of the most undersung guys here, Bennett, in terms of what he did. So both awful good teams. 97 got hot at the right time.
Yeah, one of the nice moments at McHale this year was the Jason Terry jersey retirement. And at that halftime ceremony, he gave you a really heartfelt thank you. What did that kind of ceremony mean to you?
Well, I really like Jason. I've liked all the kids that I've coached over the years, going clear back to my kids in junior high back in the early 70s in Chicago. But Jason was very special. I often kidded him. I had three guys that I really liked. Ronnie Lester at Iowa, who at least you guys know his name. A kid named Donald Whiteside, who I had at Northern Illinois, and Jason. So you kind of look at three guards at three different schools. Just tremendous kids. You know, when you get some praise like that, you know, and for you guys, maybe your own children. I don't know if you have children, but, you know, every once in a while they say something that's pretty nice. So, you know, for Jason to say that, you know, was really, really pretty special. But we had really a terrifically good relationship here over 4 years, and I think got to be very close. And I hope, you know, like you do with all the kids, that you have a good influence on them. But that was, yeah, very special. I really appreciated it a great deal.
Coach, a lot of people remember one of your big moments was when Bobby passed away, and you kind of, you know, took the reins for a little while. Just tell me the dynamic of what all was going on with the team and what you tried to do in that role at that point.
Well, you know, it was really, really a difficult time. And, of course, the worst day, just because it happened to be the day when when Luke came in and told us. We had the championship game of the Fiesta Bowl tournament that Saturday. I think it was a Saturday night, and that was really, really a tough one. Obviously, you kind of want to win. You kind of want to get out there and coach, but how much do you get on the kids or demand? I mean, that was really, really a difficult one from all viewpoints just because of the dynamics of the day. Well, then, you know, after that, we knew when the services were coming up, and really what you just tried to do was give the kids, like any coaching job, their best chance to be successful. We did have a good locker room discussion. Guys aired it out in the locker room a couple days after that Fiesta Bowl game, and I think the air really got cleared in there. And then we split at home. We beat Cal and lost to really a good Stanford team, and then went up to Washington and Washington State and beat them. I think it still stands as the biggest winning margin of any two games up there. I think it still holds. So really, I mean, the whole bottom line was, I mean, you had a job to do, and you knew that. It was horrible losing Bobby, and her relationship with my family had gone way back to 1974 at Iowa, and we'd seen their kids grow up, and our kids had grown up, and my wife and Bobby were really, really close friends and all this. I mean, it was a very, very difficult time. But as far as the team, once we knew the dynamics of when the service was going to be, and I think Richard spoke, and so on, then it was just a matter of getting out on the practice court and giving them the best chance to win. I don't know if you guys remember, Luke did take a leave of absence, just one game for that UConn game, I think in the middle of December, and that was you remember the goaltending call out there, and that was a devastating call. You know, here we go out there, and this was with Gilbert and all the guys, and really played a darn good game in Storrs, Connecticut, and then it got taken away from us at the end, and I still don't particularly care for that call, you know, but it was really just giving the guys their best chance to be successful under very difficult circumstances for them and for all of us coaches. And, you know, we managed to get through it and then went on and had a pretty darn good year.
I told Mike here that UConn game would still get you fired up.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I'm right here. I'm red in the face. I'm perspiring, you know, the whole thing. What was really interesting on that was the commissioner, I can't remember if it were, or maybe the head of officials for the Pac-10 called me about Wednesday of that week, and he said, Jim, we've gone through it frame by frame by frame by frame over and over again. We've slowed it down to the millionth of a second or whatever. And my thought is, well, if it's that darn close, how in the world is the official making the call? I was a little puzzled. At least they called and responded and said that they'd reviewed it. And obviously there wasn't anything they could do at the time. But it was, you know, that was a tough one to go into Connecticut at that particular time. They were awfully good. And to have beaten them there would have been pretty terrific. So, yeah, you're right, Anthony. That's got me fired up a little bit.
The big news from the school up north last week was the hiring of Bobby Hurley. And you guys, right after you came as an assistant, you had that epic stretch of games against Duke, including a couple that he played in as a freshman and sophomore. What do you remember about Bobby Hurley as a player?
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting. Once Duke made this run here at the end of the year, I kind of went back, and I don't know if you guys saw those Christian Leitner commercials that were on all the basketball telecasts, which were tremendous, I thought, by the way, and that whatever the ESPN series is, 30 by 30 or 30 for 30, and I watched that one on Christian Leitner, and I'm thinking, man, I think we played them. I know we went down there and had a really, really a close game, a close loss down there, and then one of the great games in my coaching career, we beat Duke here in double overtime, and then going back and looking at the roster, Turley was there, Leitner was there, I think Grant Hill was there. I remember Brian Williams sprinting all over the floor like a crazy man, and that was really, really a heck of a game. I really, a lot of these things, you look back, you kind of know the score. I really just remember some of the great games and not necessarily Hurley. Now, I've gone back and seen shots and so on. A great, great competitor, you know, and when they beat UNLV in, what, 90 or 91 for the title and the year before, they'd been crunched. I mean, Hurley is a tough, tough, hard-nosed competitor. I mean, that's kind of what I remember. I can't remember specifically anything else, but kind of a little guy who was just very, very tough and fit into the Duke system and did a great job of leading him. Those are kind of the things that I remember.
Coach, what was the most talented team you guys ever played against?
Well, that Duke team clearly would have been one of them, and whatever year that was, 90 or...
Was that a more talented team than the 2001 team you guys played?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you had Leighton or Hurley. I think Grant Hill was there. I don't recall who else, but that was an awful good team. We did play UNLV. We were up there when they had, Stacy Augmon and all those guys. We played them. And then the other one, I mean, which you guys well know, in 97 when we did win the title, I think Kansas was 31-1 or undefeated or whatever they were, and I think they had all five of those guys drafted off that team when we beat them in 97. So that was an awfully talented team. And then we came back the next one and beat North Carolina, who had Antoine Jameson and
Vince Carter.
What's his name? Vince Carter. I mean, they were absolutely loaded. So those were some of them. And then you could go back and look at the rosters and probably justify that some of those really good Stanford teams were very, very good. And then, I mean, you just go up and down the line. How would you like to play Jason Kidd for a living, when he was at Cal? They were maybe not as loaded around him, but he was certainly as good a player as we played over the years as well.
Coach, why do you think that at least the top level of the Pac-12 was, or Pac-10 back then, was so much more talented than, say, it has been the last 4 or 5 years? I mean, you always had Arizona, you always had UCLA, Stanford was there, Todd Bozeman for a couple of years had Cal going. You always had, like, at least three teams, it seemed, were in the top 15.
Well, yeah, I mean, you guys remember as well, Ernie Kent at Oregon, he had them rolling for a while.
Yeah.
Lorenzo Romar up at Washington, I think he might have had two or three Sweet 16s, maybe even Elite Eight in the early 2000s. It was just really, really a great group of coaches that worked awfully hard on recruiting. I mean, there's no secrets in this game, and it's really all about the recruiting. That's an interesting thing you asked about Bobby Hurley, and Bobby Hurley may be a very good coach. I know he's a competitor, but I've sat in my office here at home numerous times and wondered what is the problem at Arizona State. Not that I want them to win or beat Arizona, but
what do you think it is, Coach?
Well, it's recruiting. Herb Sendek and you guys and the papers have reported he is as smart a basketball coach, X's and O's, as there is in the country. And you can ask anybody that's played him over the years. But it all boils down to players, and you got to have players. I mean, when you're looking at our rosters, and I'm kind of getting off the subject, but when you look at our 2001 team with Gene Edgerson coming off the bench, Luke Walton coming off the bench, Justin Wessel coming off the bench, Ricky Anderson coming up. I mean, and then you look at the starters. We were deep when Ben Howland was there at UCLA, and who was there before him, I can't even recall. But, well, Lavin. Lavin had talent, whether he was the world's greatest coach, Mike Montgomery. You guys know maybe one of the best coaches of the last 30, 40 years. And it really boiled down to very, very good coaches who were absolutely dedicated to recruiting and got in good players. Again, it's no secret. It boils down to recruiting. You're not going to outsmart or outcoach anybody.
Well, the reason we were talking about players leaving early last week, and somebody had texted us or tweeted us or something about, hey, you should have Roz on and talk about back when you guys were on staff and you had players considering leaving after their junior year, sophomore year. What was the process like? How did you instruct them? What was the general rule of thumb about whether a guy should leave or not leave?
Well, it wasn't a rule of thumb. It really boiled down to we tried to get every single bit of information that we could to help the kids. We talked to the pro scouts who would talk to us. We talked to general managers. If somebody on the staff, Rodney or Jay John, knew somebody, on one of the pro teams or anybody that could give us information, I still think if I could find it, I got a stack of stuff about 3 inches high on Jason Gardner. I don't know if you were aware, he really considered leaving after his junior year. Now, Gilbert was going to go. Michael Wright, it just had gotten to a place school-wise where it would have really, really been hard for him his senior year, and he was ready to go. But the fact is, you tried to get all the information we could, and some guys, it worked out really well. For Gilbert Arenas, it really worked out well. In fact, I'm not so sure he isn't still being paid, and, obviously he's had some issues. And then for Miles Simon, for example, we got all the information we could. We talked to Jerry West. We talked to this guy, that guy. And they all advised Miles to come back, to work on his shot, to work on this. Well, as you're aware, Miles should have gone after his junior year, and we won the title. He was the most outstanding player and so on. But the biggest thing was just to get as many, many hardcore facts and keep the emotions out of it. I mean, obviously, we would have loved the kids to stay, but keep the emotions out of it. What was going to be best for them? What was going to be best for their family? Economically, was it going to make sense? This was another real quick, interesting one, and it goes way back to Chris Mills. And Chris was done. But this is just how this stuff can really mess with your head. Everybody was telling Chris Mills, you're top 5, 6, 7 player. And you guys remember Chris. He was tough as nails. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, he drops to 22. Well, he still had a great career, is the point. But now, what if you're looking at the 18 to 22 and everybody, including your agent, including all these hangers, like, man, you're going to be right there, 18 to 22, and you drop into the second round. I mean, you're not guaranteed a thing. So it's really a tough call, and you just try to get as much unemotional information and give it to the kids and to their family as you can, and then hope that families and high school coaches and relatives and these AAU coaches now will have the best interest of the kids at heart. That's about all you can hope for.
Coach, kind of piggybacking on Anthony's last point, is there somebody else that you'd like to see have their jersey retired, or maybe a couple of guys?
Well, it's been in the papers recently, I'm not so certain that Stanley Johnson won't be eligible because he's been what you just named the National Freshman of the Year or something. I think your name goes up there if you get some sort of a National Player of the Year or some type award. Name me some guys. There have just been so
Miles
many.
Miles Simon, Damon Stoudemire.
Yeah, I mean, come on, Damon's name isn't up there in that ring of honor. Now, Damon's as good a player as there was, long-time pro career. Miles was the leader of a team that won a national title, and I think he started some his freshman year. So, I mean, those would be two that certainly deserve to be up there, and I suppose, I don't know if Anthony Cook is up there, but he would come to mind, and I think Judd is up there. He certainly deserves to be. It's a tough call because you can't have everybody, and yet, there have been some pretty tremendous players here over the years. But those two guys, I mean, come on, Damon was as good as there was and certainly deserves to be up there.
Coach, we can't thank you enough for your time. We'd love to do this again.
Call anytime. I'm here. I'm available. The only thing is just check my tee times because in the morning I'm kind of on the golf course, check the tee times. But anytime, it was a lot of fun.
Will do. Thanks again, Coach.
Thanks,
appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
We'll be right back with you. You're listening to the Kevin and Mike Show on Sports Radio 1290.